I'm Jason Van Medding.
And I'm Ksenia Chmutina.
Welcome to Disasters Deconstructed podcast. So how's your summer been, Ksenia?
All right, so far. Well, I've done all my holidays, so, you know, it's just work now. How about you?
Yeah, pretty good. Just getting back into the new semester.
Yeah, well, we've pretty much done 3 months of podcasting now, haven't we, over the summer? Wow.
It's been amazing. We've spoken to some really awesome researchers mostly, and I hope that we're going to be able to broaden that to, you know, members of the public and journalists and so on in the future. But I guess as academics ourselves, we had to start somewhere, and it makes sense with our within our existing network to talk to a lot of people who actually research disasters, especially for this first series where we're trying to disentangle some of these difficult concepts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But you listeners, you know, if you have any ideas on whom we need to talk to, or indeed if you want to talk to us, please let us know, you know, tweet at us or drop us an email.
For sure. So I'm excited about this episode today, Ksenia. We're, we're going to talk about climate change, and it's a pretty controversial topic, I guess, and something that's not very well understood or perceived in different ways. And there's so much arguments about it, isn't there?
Right. And we haven't really touched upon it until now. So hopefully you'll enjoy this episode as much as we've done.
Yeah, I think in one of our early episodes with Joanne Jordan, we talked about climate change, especially in relation to her work on vulnerability in Bangladesh. But I don't think it's been a big focus. It's been mentioned in passing, but we wanted to really get into this issue today with a special guest. And so our guest today is Dr. Ilan Kelman. He is a reader in risk, resilience, and global health at the University College London, England. And he's a professor too at the University of Agder, Kristiansand, Norway. And we're so excited to speak to him today.
We are, and I'm pretty sure everyone who does disaster studies have heard of Ilan or have read Ilan's work, because, well, not only Ilan is absolutely prolific in his academic publications, but he is also has been compiling and making sure that other people's publications, particularly old publications, are open access. And I mean, his website, ilankalman.org, is an absolute treasure chest of all sorts of things that we can only think about in relation to disaster research activities, risk, vulnerability, sustainability, islands, and all much more.
So we're really looking forward to this episode. We're going to share a lot of resources on the show notes. So don't forget to check out those notes and links and resources. I'm sure that Ilan would love to connect with any of you that are interested in learning more about his work.
So, climate change has been a very prominent topic in disaster studies, and of course, much attention has been paid to climate-induced hazards. So far in this season, we've already discussed hazards, we talked about exposure, we talked about vulnerability, capacity, we also looked at the problems with hazard-focused understanding of disasters. And today, we're going to look at another way that this gets us into difficulties, when we talk about and try to take action on climate change.
So, Ilan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So your interests seem to be really broad, Ilan, and we were wondering if you could share a bit with us about how you ended up working in disaster studies.
Yeah, sure. I mean, as you sort of say, I have a lot of interests and they're quite wide. I really have never focused on disasters only. Instead, I've really taken a wide approach and I really enjoy connecting areas. I think the importance is not really focusing on one topic, but actually bringing a lot of different areas, different ideas, different fields together. I really got there because I was always interested in making a positive contribution to science and to society while tackling challenging problems. This sort of led me to sustainability, environment, and development fields, which are very broad, cover a lot of range, a lot of area, mm-hmm. but and one of those topics is very much disasters. There are sadly so many such problems remaining to be solved, and for me, by focusing on only one aspect, such as disasters, actually makes it very difficult to solve them. So I really try and keep my interests broad, try to bring areas together, and just learn from a lot of people and a lot of different thoughts.
So you must end up working with a lot of really interesting and diverse researchers, right?
Well, that's absolutely one of the rewards of it, and it very much includes you two, because there's always people coming from different perspectives, different approaches. We're always learning from each other and exchanging different ideas, and it very much helps us strike at the root of the problems, at the challenges, and coming up with solutions, while also recognizing that just having knowledge does not necessarily mean that knowledge is implemented or applied. So we do have to ensure that we communicate, that we exchange, that we work with the people we talk about, and fundamentally that we are always learning from everyone.
Mm. And I guess you must have so many potential topics and research problems that you could look at given this broad scope. So what are the key problems or issues that you're passionate about at the moment, Ilan?
Well, for me, I've always tended to focus on islands and also polar regions. So I'm very much interested in looking at whether disasters, disaster risk, and these wider topics present different challenges and different opportunities in islands and polar regions compared to other places. This means that I connect with and enfold, whether it's tourism or other livelihoods, migration, other aspects of movement and mobilities, definitely health. Because I'm very fortunate to have a joint appointment between a Disasters Institute and the Global Health Institute, and these wider aspects of social change and environmental change. So the key research problems include, well, how do we bring these all together? Mm-hmm. How do we learn from islands and polar regions without focusing on only islands and polar regions? How do we exchange knowledge? How do we exchange ideas? How do we exchange practices? And that really defines a lot of how I approach these problems, a lot of what makes me passionate, and a lot of what pushes forward my research and my application.
Mm.
Well, I guess at the heart of island research, particularly recently, and polar research recently, climate change has played quite a key role. And I'm sure you and me and everyone else have seen in the news in the last few years climate change being blamed for disasters. But you, Ilan, have been arguing for a while that we should not just get distracted by climate change. So what is the problem and what are the implications of largely focusing on climate change-induced hazards only, particularly when it comes to policy?
Well, it's not really my argument. What I'm doing is I'm simply articulating what is there in the definitions and in the official documents. So much as I would like to claim the basics as being my brilliant invention, it actually came long before me. And all I'm doing is summarizing and explaining what was there even before I was in research. In fact, long before I was in research. So if we take climate change, simply by definition, climate change is the changing climate, which makes a lot of sense. And we know that climate, by definition, is average weather. So when we talk about climate change, all we're saying is that the average weather or weather statistics are changing. When we talk about disasters, as I expect you discussed in previous episodes, weather covers potential hazards. So by definition, if we're talking about disaster risk, weather, climate change, affects only the hazard part. Mm-hmm. Yet we know that vulnerability causes disasters. So climate change comes along and people start blaming climate change for everything, including disasters. Mm-hmm. But climate change is, again, only about the climate or the weather changing. So climate change is unfortunately distracting us from the vulnerability cause of disasters, which further leads to climate change becoming a scapegoat. And we've sadly seen after a couple of major tsunamis, people were talking about these tsunami disasters as coming from climate change or being linked to climate change.
Yeah.
And considering that in these instances, it was earthquakes which caused the tsunami, and also, of course, the disaster still comes from the vulnerabilities, bringing climate change into this equation is simply not supported by the science. So for me, what we need to do is let's stop saying that climate change causes disasters. Let's be clear about how climate change is defined. And from that definition, it means that climate change significantly influences some hazards. Now, within this, of course, as scientists, we know that there are so rarely absolutes and there's always exceptions. And for climate change actually causing disasters, there are a couple of very big exceptions. One of these is heat waves. So there is no doubt that climate change is pushing heat-humidity-time combinations beyond the scope for human survivability without being indoors and with climate control in many areas. And of course, many of these areas don't have the scope, the resources, or the opportunities to be indoors all the time. So if we cannot survive outdoors because of the heat, humidity, and time, then that becomes a disaster, and that is absolutely caused by climate change. And the other one which we're in the process of discussing is sea level rise. So there are different mechanisms which cause sea level rise, there are different inputs into it, and possibly different outcomes. If we do end up with sea level rise, which is quite major, then there are going to be significant disasters resulting from that. People, no matter what their vulnerabilities, are going to be severely affected, and this is coming directly from human-induced climate change. Those are big exceptions. We cannot ignore them. They are reasons themselves to tackle climate change, but we have to recognize within wider disaster risk, they are actually exceptions. The general rule is that climate change does not cause disasters.
And so how do you find that people react to that sort of articulation? Do you have pushback against that position, Ila?
Well, there's different people and different reactions, and some of them very much say, you know what, I didn't realize that. That makes a lot of sense. And even better, they go away and verify what I've been telling them. Because there's no reason to accept what I say about the definition of climate change. It's easy to go online and download the free glossaries from the main climate change bodies, which are part of the United Nations and which scientists and non-scientists accept. So I would encourage that. Yourselves, go and look at the glossaries. Yourselves, go and look at literature. Yourselves, go and look at the arguments. And the people who do not necessarily believe me directly, but get inspired by what I'm saying to verify for themselves, then this is where we exchange, teach, learn, and do better.
Yeah.
What is most unfortunate is I do find a small cohort who actually do not respond to me. They just ignore what I'm saying. They ignore what is in the scientific literature. They ignore what is in the glossaries and actually don't seem to be interested in portraying accurately the role of climate change in disaster risk. This is very frustrating because they sometimes have a lot of influence on policy and practice, which means that we can be led down the route of some fairly dangerous ideas and practices, which are not based on what the scientists are saying, are not based on what the key policymakers are saying, and actually misrepresent what we do know.
And do you think that that has some sort of political agenda when you come up against that?
Well, I'd be interested in finding out. I think that rather than presupposing what people are thinking, rather than ascribing motives to them, I would very much like them to communicate with me, to join me in discussing either in person or by email, to find out why they are not interested in looking at the scientific literature, and to find out why they simply bypass what they are told without even checking for themselves.
So I wanted to ask Ilan about this idea that climate change is a natural process. Well, some argue the opposite, that climate change is entirely human caused. How does climate change fit into that discourse about the naturalness of disasters?
Well, for me, I would hope that we could engage by focusing on the science. What the science says is that stating that climate change today is entirely natural is wrong. And what the science says is that stating that climate change today is entirely artificial is also wrong. It is a combination of human activity and of natural variation. What we do know is that the rapid substantive warming of the climate, not of all weather, but of the climate, that is absolutely caused mostly, almost entirely by us. And it's similarly for disasters. When we're looking at this intersection of disasters and climate change, if we're trying to understand the role of climate change in disaster risk, for me, it's fairly simple. Let's stick with the science. The science shows us that most disasters are caused by vulnerabilities. So it is rare for climate change to be a causative factor in disasters. The exceptions, though, the heat waves and the sea level rise, are brutal, and they suffice for reasons unto themselves to tackle climate change. All this comes from science, and science also tells us what we can and should be doing with respect to climate change and disasters.
I absolutely agree with you in that we need to focus on science, but I guess in recent decades, we have been sort of swept away by this wave of populism where science has been neglected and the role of science has been demolished, I guess, to an extent. So how then do we promote all these messages if the science is so undervalued?
And that is actually the key question, to which I am sorry I do not have an answer. What I do know is I work with wonderful colleagues around the world. We're all trying to work out what we could be doing better and what we should be doing better. Who else could and should we be working with, which we are not at the moment? How can we better articulate our own messages and our own approaches? So this is where I do continue to publish scientifically extensively. I do my best to make everything freely available online. But I also recognize that, number one, not everyone necessarily has a scope to be reading and trawling through scientific papers. And not everyone even has access to good internet. So this is where I go far beyond the science and try with public communication and popular science. So again, sticking with the internet, I certainly do my best on social media. And if people are interested, you can find me on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Instagram, for the scientists, also ResearchGate and academia.edu. Plus, if you're inclined to use Facebook for professional purposes, that's what I tend to do. Therefore, I hope to get the messages out far beyond scientists and far beyond disaster scientists. Also, spending a lot of time speaking, again, to people who may not have the time or scope for even blogs or for social media, maybe because they have other priorities, maybe because they don't have internet access, and therefore talking to them to find out, well, what do they need? How can I better provide them with information for my work? What is the most useful media for them to access my science? How do I need to translate it and provide it in different ways and in different forms? And fundamentally, what would be useful and usable for them? I have a long way to go. I've made a lot of mistakes. I'm still trying to improve. But I hope that your work through this podcast, everyone's work through science, scientific publication, popular science, publication and presentations in social media, we can hopefully continue to learn and do better.
I think that's so important, Ilan. And as you know, we're really keen on popular science and writing in different styles for different audiences, right?
Yeah, and it's not just about writing, though. Some people learn better by music or performing arts. Totally. Others learn better by speaking, having a conversation. So written is one form which we have to use, but let's not be confined to it.
Absolutely. And in our recent conference over here in Gainesville, we had some of the great interventions were poetry and
photography,
yeah, and different ways of communicating these messages.
And that was so exciting. I mean, I've done photography for a long time, and I'm realizing now that I should be using it far, far more to communicate science, policy, and practice. So I appreciate your leadership in that. Similarly, I'm in the process of coming out with a book for Popular Science published by Oxford University Press, which goes through these arguments on why disasters generally are not natural, including these points on climate change. And the question is raised, do we really need one more book? And my response is, well, partly it helps me, because it helps me to formulate my discussions better and also to understand more about how people respond to what I say. But also we have to continue using all these different media, including the written word, but photography, poetry, dance, theater.
How do you deal with all this linguistic mess that we seem to be in at the moment? You know, so we talk about buzzwords, we talk about disasters, we talk about climate change, and at the same time, we use similar words which have completely different meanings. And even I sometimes find it quite problematic to navigate all this terminology. So what should we do about it? What do you do about it?
I try and simplify, and I try and be straightforward. So even the differentiation of exposure and vulnerability is so technical that when I've challenged people, they talk themselves into circles and knots trying to tell me what the difference is between exposure and vulnerability, which means that I've proposed in a scientific paper and I've proposed in Popular Science, why not drop exposure? Vulnerability and hazard themselves are difficult enough words. And they are difficult enough to explain and to translate linguistically and culturally. We do not need yet one more, which is exposure. So absolutely, disaster risk as a function of hazard and vulnerability is going to tie us into knots trying to understand and explain hazard and vulnerability. But we do have to start somewhere. We do have to use language and words to some extent. Why complicate it more? And therefore, I advocate dropping exposure. We are also discussing, do we even need phrases like disaster risk reduction and climate change adaptation? We know that climate change does nothing different from disaster risk reduction, but disaster risk reduction does much, much more than climate change adaptation. So in fact, we could simply talk about disaster risk reduction and cover everything with respect to climate change adaptation, which means we can drop the bizarre word adaptation, which actually has a meaning in science, in evolutionary science, which long precedes climate change.
Yeah.
We can drop these discussions about whether or not climate change adaptation is development or is different from development and what it actually means, because we also generally accept that disaster risk reduction is effectively development. So yes, we can and should discuss, well, what does development mean? What does sustainability mean? How do we translate them? But again, rather than having four, five, six phrases, which we have to work through, why not have two or three? And so with development encompassing disaster risk reduction, encompassing climate change adaptation, maybe if we start with as simple, as straightforward development ideas, or simply dealing with risk or dealing with disaster risk, that would go a long way towards trying to get us out of this linguistic mess. I am troubled by the fact that the more glossaries which come out, the more complicated they seem to be. And in many cases, an earlier glossary which was elegant, simple, and so communicative is then superseded by one which uses all sorts of jargon and long phrases.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, recently I came across the glossary that you put together, which shows different definitions of disaster.
Yep.
And it really quite entertained me, you know, for almost an hour, just to see how the definitions have evolved and how they differ quite substantially from different segments of, I guess, industry, different segments of government bodies. It's such a mess.
And that glossary maybe has 1% of the official definitions that are out there in science research
right.
policy and practice. And it was only English.
Yeah. Right, so right, absolutely.
What we need is people like you, or maybe one day I will do it, or we will work together on it, is very much a paper trying to analyze them systematically and exactly go through this time evolution which you mentioned to try and come up with insights by what we even mean about disaster. or it could be PhD. So again, if we have students who we want to co-supervise, or maybe someone will just come along and do it before we have done it, and this would be wonderful because we need more and more people looking at these definitions, looking at the connotations, looking at the meanings, and understanding it across time, across languages, and across cultures.
Absolutely.
It seems like sometimes that scientists are searching for a new concept, a new acronym that they might use in their work to kind of put themselves on the map. Do you think that has something to do with why we have all these concepts that are often reworked from previous science?
I certainly accept that as a possibility and a hypothesis. Again, I'm going to be cautious about blaming people.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be very careful about saying, I think you're wrong and this is why you were wrong because you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
I'd actually rather say, look, you've come up with this idea. Do we really need it?
Yeah.
Let's sit down and talk about it. And let's sit down and see whether or not it does help or whether it just confuses. One example is people talking about so-called NatTech disasters, which comes from a hybrid of natural, technical, or natural technological. And there's really two responses. If we're trying to avoid the phrase natural disaster, which is perfectly fair and legitimate, it makes no sense to combine natural with something else. And second, the vast majority of disruption and casualties, the vast majority of the real problems with disaster are because a social or technical system had difficulty, which means that fundamentally, all disasters are nat, soak, tech, or combination, or whatever that even means. Or to simplify, to make it more elegant, they're basically disasters, which is why we call them disasters.
So, Ilan, let's go back to the science communication. You know, I really like to ask you a few questions about how you write and why do you write in a way that you write, in a kind of much more simple way than most academics would.
Well, I think it's a balance. So some of my papers are very technical. And some of my papers have equations which are so wide that they cannot stay on one line in the paper. Similarly, I do have some more qualitative papers where the ideas and their articulation is fairly complex. But alternatively, some of my scientific papers, I try my best to make them communicative. And of course, I blog a lot, I tweet, I use Instagram, and give a lot of presentations to different audiences. To me, it's about trying to break down the barriers between scientists and non-scientists. Because if we talk about scientists and the general public, we actually forget that we as scientists are part of the general public. Mm. And disasters affect us. Yes. So a linear approach to communication of me being this wonderful, brilliant academic who conveys his wisdom upon the masses is simply unacceptable. Mm. To me, it's about exchange, interaction, and dialogue. And I learned so much from interacting with people. I learned so much from simply attending presentations, giving presentations, having question and discussion. So I try to seek this balance between leadership and following. I think we all have a duty to be creative and to call out people when the knowledge is incorrect, but we also have a duty and obligation to listen to what people in different groups want and seek and work with each other to best offer each other what science and research could provide for policy and practice.
And if I were to ask you, what would be the key message that general public needs to learn from your work about climate change, disasters, communities, and everything that we have discussed, what would that message be?
Well, I hope it would be that science is for everyone. It is to serve society, and everyone can engage with science and research. So by making the concepts more elegant, by tackling the fundamentals and really the roots of what we're talking about, I hope that everything is fairly straightforward for everyone to engage in. So some examples. Disasters are typically not natural. Climate change is rarely a single causative factor. And this applies if we're talking about migration, if we're talking about conflict, if we're talking about disasters. Climate change definitely influences, but fundamentally so infrequently causes. So scientists, I hope, have plenty to offer what society needs. Rather than disrespecting them, rather than disrespecting each other, let's engage, let's communicate, let's exchange. Because science should be to serve society, science is for everyone.
Thank you, Ilan, for such a clear articulation of your passion for science and for kind of how to communicate with the public. I think it's something that's much needed and we really want to promote on our podcast. So thanks everyone for joining us today again. We have been talking to Ilan Kelman about climate change. Thanks, Ilan, for being with us.
And thank you for your work and thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ilan. And as always, if you are not following us yet, please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter at DisastersDecon and also on Instagram at DisastersDecon.
You have been listening to, and hopefully soon will exchange with, Xenia, Jason and Ilan on Disasters Deconstructed podcast.